Eric Metaxas here. Please join me in a life-saving mission to set Sudanese slaves free through Christian Solidarity International. Since 1995, CSI has freed more than 100,000 women and children from years of bondage and abuse. Your $250 gift frees, feeds, and heals these captives and sets them on a path to a new life in freedom. Please help us free another slave now. Call 888-253-3522, 888-253-3522, or click the CSI banner at MetaxasTalk.com, MetaxasTalk.com.
Okay, welcome to the Eric Metaxas Show. Eric is indisposed at the moment.
I'm afraid he's been having GI problems and uncomfortable bloating.
But I'm sure he'll be out in a jiff.
Oh, here he is now.
Looking pale and shaken. Oh, you okay, little buddy?
The Eric Metaxas Show.
Hey there, folks. Is today the 22nd? Alvin, Chris, is today the 22nd already?
12-22-2020.
That doesn't make no sense. Listen, we've got a lot of things to share. First of all, two big guests today. Jonathan Kahn. You've heard of him? Jonathan Kahn, the Harbinger, Harbinger 2, Electric Boogaloo. We're going to be talking to him in hour two today. In a couple of seconds, we're talking to my friend Greg Laurie. Greg Laurie has a book coming out about Billy Graham. I always have fun with Greg Laurie. But we have to pretend to be serious. And today we're going to, I think we're going to try to be serious today so that we don't get too silly. Couple things. The election. I'm going to say this again. I believe that there has been serious election fraud, so much so from what I have seen that Biden did not actually win. Trump actually won. Now, you can't just assert that. You have to look and you have to somehow through Congress, through state legislatures, through our courts, you have to prove that. You have to make the case. People are doing that right now. But I want to say to those of you who are unclear on this, whenever somebody says to you, hey, it's over, move on. I've gotten emails from like, you know, supposed friends telling me you need to get over this. It's like, no, I don't need to get over it. In fact, you will get over it when you see that at the very least, there have been forces at work which are as wicked as anything we've ever seen. There's so many people, and I say this over and over again, there are people in this world, in this country mostly, who have no understanding of evil. My parents grew up in Europe where there was communist and Nazi evil. They saw it, they lived it, and they taught me to know that in this world, this is not their biblical worldview. This is their historical worldview, which happens to coincide with a biblical worldview, right? There's evil in the world, and there are people who don't care about freedom and liberty along the lines of George Washington and Ben Franklin. And they would love to use whatever power they have to gain more power, to take power away from you. For them, it is a zero-sum game. They don't believe in biblical values. They don't believe that the human being has inherent dignity and worth and is created in the image of God. Do you understand that the Communist Party of China believes that, and that all the atheistic world systems believe that? And when they are given power to exercise that worldview, they will crush human beings like bugs, because in their mind, human beings have no more value than bugs. The Chinese communists are doing that right now to their own people. Okay. So if you pretend to care about racism or about Muslims, they are crushing the Uyghur Muslims simply because they are Uyghur Muslims. That's all. That's their biggest crime. They will not kowtow to the atheistic, satanic premises and mandates of the Chinese Communist Party. We have plenty people in America working with the Chinese Communist Party, whether explicitly or implicitly, whether knowingly or unknowingly, whether it is Apple or Nike doing business with them and making gazillions of dollars because they decide to look the other way with regard to the evil human rights abuses. These are the people that would say, oh, during Nazi times, I would have been the first to speak up against Hitler, or during slavery times, I would have been the first to speak up against this obviously evil thing. Well, that's baloney, because they're not speaking up against the same wickedness that's happening now. And why would we think that China, which has been given tremendous power and wealth because of the greed and naivete, mostly of the West, mostly of Americans of both parties, why would we believe they wouldn't use that power to influence our elections? The idea of Russia influencing our elections is a joke compared to the idea of China doing that. China has the power and the incentive. And it seems obvious that they have done a lot to influence our elections. Now, what they've done specifically, I think we'll find out. But we're in a cold war with China at this point. So anytime you have somebody like a Joe Biden, rather obviously in bed with Chinese money, whether directly, whether wittingly, whether unwittingly, all those details need to come out. But if you don't take this serious, I can't take you seriously. Folks, if you're an American, if you're anybody in the world that cares about liberty, you have a moral obligation to take this seriously in the same way that the people living in the 1850s had a moral obligation to take chattel slavery seriously, the same way that Germans in the 30s had a moral obligation to take the Nazi worldview seriously. And the Nazi worldview, it's an atheistic worldview. It says that some humans can use their power to crush other humans. There's no inherent dignity. There's no God. So that's the reality we're dealing with. And in this election, it seems more and more obvious that bad things have happened. And if anybody in this country thinks that those of us who are convinced of that are ever, ever, ever going to give up in trying to expose the fraud and the corruption, or at least get to the bottom of it, you're kidding yourselves. That's not going to happen. Biden will not be inaugurated until we, the people, are convinced that he was properly elected. At this point, I'm convinced he was not. But unless he and his party and the fake conservatives and the Republican Party get serious about this, we are not moving forward as a country. You should just know that, folks. We are not. There are tons of people praying God is real. Crazy people like me believe God is real. He created the universe and he works in history and he hears our prayers. And so I just want to say that this is not going to go away. We're not just going to waltz along. There are various ways that we can get there. But all I know is I don't care how we get there. I just know that it's God's will that liberty continue and that our liberty is a gift to us from him to use to do what is right, including sharing that liberty with the rest of the world in places like China and North Korea. So there you go. So in a minute, we're going to have an anodyne apolitical conversation with Greg Laurie, with Jonathan Kahn in hour two. We'll get a little bit political. I want to say that those of you, if you haven't heard Steve Bannon, we put it on our YouTube channel. Please subscribe to our YouTube channel. We need everybody, please, to subscribe to our YouTube channel. It's the Eric Metaxas Show. It's not Eric Metaxas, the Eric Metaxas Show. Please subscribe. We're putting some great stuff up there. The Mike Lindell video is up there. I hope you listen to that. I really hope you listen to the Steve Bannon video. And please share these videos and share what you can on social media. Please sign up to my personal email list. That's ericmetaxas.com. And speaking of which, if you want to give to CSI, and boy, do we hope you will, because that's actual literal slavery happening and we can do something about it, go to our radio website. That's metaxastalk.com. metaxastalk.com. There you'll see the banner for CSI, not at ericmetaxas.com. We are so grateful to those of you who stand with us during this bizarre time. There's just so much going on. Later this week, we're going to be hearing from the man who runs Iran Alive Ministries. What's going on in Iran is such good news. Most of us have never heard about it. I only have heard about it through an extremely dear friend of mine, Dean Crowder, who's the president of the board, chairman of the board of Iran Alive Ministries. But that's coming up, I think, tomorrow. A lot of cool stuff coming up. We evidently, mystore.com has way oversold the Muggsy books, I told you, because they're so cheap. So you might not get them till after Christmas, but you will get them. But at these prices, I don't think you can complain. They're practically free. The prices are going to have to go up at the beginning of the new year. But just so you know, they've been selling like hotcakes, as I feared they would or hoped they would. But also, the Caveman books are still available, and they are, again, priced like below the basement cheap. Don't want to forget to mention also that Alvin, Against the Tide, if people go on a Google search and you put in Against the Tide in quotes, Against the Tide and streaming, not in quotes, Against the Tide in quotes and then streaming, there's a number of ways you can see that movie with John Lennox. I watched it a couple of nights ago. It is fantastic. Check it out. We'll be right back with Greg Laurie.
He's making a list and checking it twice.
Jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the way. Oh, what fun it is to ride in a one-horse open sleigh. Jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the way.
Hey there, folks. It's the Eric Metaxas Show. I'm really excited because I have one of my dearest friends on as my guest right now, Pastor Greg Laurie of Harvest Ministries in Southern California, around the world. Greg Laurie, welcome to the program.
Eric, good to be with you again.
I want to talk to you in a moment about your book, World Changers. It's about how ordinary people can be used by God, and it's like it's one of these perennial messages. But before that, I love talking to people with whom I disagree on things. Why? Because I feel like you and I believe we can reason together. We both love the Lord, and so we can actually talk and try to process things. Because I don't ever want to be. I mean, that's iron sharpening iron, right? So you and I,
yeah, exactly.
And you're with a million of my friends who say, look, the tea leaves say that Biden is going to be the president on January 20th or whatever it is. That's what most people are saying. And I have taken the view that even though that is true, I think there really has been fraud. I wouldn't want to say that lightly. In other words, I don't say that because, hey, I like Trump and I don't like Biden. And that's a separate issue because I have been very public about Trump's stand for religious liberty and many, many things. He's, of course, so controversial. But I've said and you have said that he has been a force for good in so many ways, despite things about him that maybe we wouldn't agree with. But with regard to the new election, you are pretty convinced by what has come out in the news that there's really not a path forward for him to be inaugurated.
That's how I'm seeing it at this point, Eric. You know, I'm interested in what's happening. I'm following it very closely, but it's my view that Biden will become our president.
And so I want to talk to you about that. But I just thought because you're a friend that I can say to you that the reason I'm hopeful that that won't actually be the case is because when we're talking about election integrity, you know, that's where I get my back up and I say, hey, folks, in America, this is sacred. And if we have any idea that there might have been funny business, which, you know, tens of millions of Americans do, we're obliged to take it seriously, if only to show that it didn't happen. And so there are people working now as we're having this conversation who are utterly convinced that there were all kinds of fraud perpetrated. And it has been very frustrating because, as you know and I know, there's this narrative that says that's just kind of fringe talk. But they're convinced, no, it's, you know, there's the smoking gun, there's the body. We don't have any choice. We have to investigate this. And people trying to shoo us away, no matter what happens, we kind of have an obligation to look into this. So what I've been saying and I say now is that I think as Americans, we do have to be committed to election integrity, and we have to try to not shrink from that. Because I think there's always the narrative that says, shut up, it's over, it's over. And you think, well, maybe even if it's over in some ways, we still have an obligation to the Republic to look into what happened. So My view is that the folks who are working on this have a number of paths forward where they say that, you know, they're going to do all they can to uncover this. And if that happens, my goodness, everything is going to change. I also believe, Greg, that, you know, we are talking about a miracle here because this is so difficult. It's so difficult. So there are lots and lots of people praying, but I don't believe that, you know, we're ready to go down that path. But you and I know we are looking first to Jesus, not to a political leader, and that even if Stalin is elected president, we're commanded to rejoice in the Lord always and to walk through it with him. So I just wanted to say that up front because I think it's important people understand where I'm coming from and understand that I've got tons of friends like you who really don't believe there's a realistic path forward. And, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah. And, you know, and of course, we're commanded in Scripture to pray for those who are in authority. And when I would pray for President Trump, I was criticized on multiple occasions. And they would ask, well, would you never prayed for President Obama? Well, actually, I did. And you know, and as you remember, Eric, you know, we were given opportunities to visit the president and he asked for prayer and I gladly responded. But, you know, if I got a call, and I don't expect this call to come, but if I were to get a call, would you come to the White House and pray for President Biden? I would certainly do that. I would pray for any president. And I, you know, I have a new book coming out after the one that we're talking about just for a moment on Billy Graham. You know, I've written these spiritual biographies, one about Steve McQueen's conversion, one about Johnny Cash's spiritual life. And my last one is called Billy Graham, The Man I Knew. And the amazing thing about Billy is he had a ministry to presidents, both Republican and Democrat. You know, in fact, he had great influence on people like Kennedy and Johnson and of course, on Reagan and Bush. And arguably, even with President Trump, because I was with Billy on his 95th birthday, and then businessman Donald Trump was there as well. And so my tact, what I'm doing is I want to just be able to speak to people on both sides of the aisle, because I'm an evangelist and I want to proclaim the gospel to people that don't hold the views that I hold. And so, you know, I take more of it's not a neutral view because I'm very clear on where I stand on issues. And one thing that the president did that he deserves enormous credit for is this very, very strong pro-life stand. I believe he was the first sitting president to speak at the March for Life in Washington.
These
are remarkable things, and we're thankful. Yeah, that's right. We're thankful for all that he's done. But now I just, my focus is, I believe America, and we really agree on this, Eric, and we've talked about it many times, is we need a spiritual awakening desperately. And we've discussed the impact of George Whitefield on our nation as it was still coming together, and how he, along with George Washington, the two Georges who played pivotal roles in the establishment of our country, George Whitefield, more in the spiritual, George Washington is a military and political leader, but also a man of faith. But I just feel my passion should be directed right now to just getting the gospel to as many people as I can. So, you know, it's not that I don't have strong political views. Actually, I do. But my focus and my emphasis is on calling people to Christ and trying to help them grow in their relationship with him.
And of course, that is the most important thing. And you just kind of give me an opportunity to reiterate that, you know, I have gotten much more political recently because of the times in which we live. But at the same time, to reiterate, my goodness, nobody should ever forget what is the most important thing in the world. It's having a relationship with the God who created us and loves us and died for us. There is nothing more wonderful, nothing more important than that. And we can get all kinds of stuff wrong, and we need to have grace for each other and love each other. But you have been an evangelist your whole life. You were friends with Billy Graham. Obviously, your book about him is coming out this year. And you were there, Greg. I want to talk about this. When we had our last real revival in America. The Jesus movement in the late 60s, the early 70s, the Jesus people. I can't imagine what it must have been like. And of course, you're there in California, right, where all those people were baptized in the surf. You're living there today. And the Lord launched you not just as a Christian, but as an evangelist through that time. We've just got 60 seconds in this segment, but just tell us about that time, because I think people need to have hope that we can see that in America again.
Yeah, well, I didn't even know I was in a revival because I accepted Christ at age 17, 1970. So I just thought this was normal Christianity. In a way, it is normal Christianity, normal New Testament Christianity. I think we've settled for a watered-down version. So I walked in smack dab into the middle of a genuine spiritual awakening, the last great awakening, and some scholars believe maybe the greatest of all awakenings. I don't know, but it was real. And it changed my life, and we need another one soon.
Well, when we come back, I want to talk to you about that, because I think nothing would make you and me happier than to see tons of people come to a living faith in the God who loves them and died for them. We'll be right back talking to Pastor Greg Laurie. Folks, I'm talking to my friend, Pastor Greg Laurie. He's not just a pastor. He's an author. He's an evangelist. Greg, you've written so many books, and sometimes people write books, and I go, I'm so glad that person wrote that book, because now I don't have to. I'm not even joking. You've written a few books about Johnny Cash, about Steve McQueen, and now the new one coming up in a couple of months here about Billy Graham. These are the kind of books that, you know, if I had the time and you hadn't written them, I would say somebody needs to tell that story. You told the story of Steve McQueen coming to faith. You told the story of Johnny Cash and his profound Christian faith. And now the third in this series is about Billy Graham. What's the title of that book?
It's called Billy Graham, The Men I Knew. And, you know, Billy's sort of the glue between Johnny and Steve. Billy was very close with Johnny Cash, and, you know, Johnny had a lot of struggles. He struggled with amphetamines that he started using when he began his career. He was on the road, and he struggled with them throughout his life and was arrested a few times. Never served time in prison, as some people think he did, but he was a struggling Christian. But I underline the word Christian. He was a Christian. And Billy continued to use Johnny and be friends with Johnny and have Johnny play at his crusades, which was a very risky thing for Billy to do at that point in his career. And then with McQueen, when McQueen came to Christ, he found out he had cancer about 9 months to a year later. And as he realized he wasn't going to make it, he put out the request through his pastor, Leonard DeWitt, to maybe meet Billy Graham. And Billy came to meet Steve, and they had prayer together. And then Billy gave his Bible to Steve. Steve was on his way to a clinic in Juarez, Mexico, to receive sort of an unorthodox treatment for his cancer. And so Steve had forgotten his Bible, and Billy gave his Bible to Steve and signed it to him. And then Steve tragically died in Juarez, Mexico, and they pulled the sheet down, and he was holding Billy's Bible. That was the last thing he was holding on to. So Billy Graham, you know, this glue between these two well-known figures, the king of cool, Steve McQueen, the godfather of cool, Johnny Cash, and to me, the coolest cat of all, Billy Graham. You know, he's going to have a special statue in Statuary Hall, and he's going to be remembered. And, you know, he's a historical figure beyond even just being an evangelist. But the reason I wrote a book about America is I wanted to show the human side, the real side, the personal side. And actually, as I got to know Billy as a person and as a friend, he was even more impressive. And he already was so impressive as a public figure, but he was everything I hoped he would be and more as I got to know him.
Well, it's amazing to me that you knew him the way you did, because I just revered him so much. I think I told the story that, or I told you the story that when I was at Yale, I had walked away from the Christian group on campus. I thought, I'm too cool now to hang out with the Christians, and they're sort of odd, and I'll hang out with the literary crowd. We'll smoke like clove cigarettes and, you know, be cool. And just as I stepped away from the Christian group on campus, this is a true story, and I was kind of like trying to figure out my own path or whatever, wherever I was. One day I heard Billy Graham's coming to campus to speak at Yale. And I thought, what? Like this incredible, you know, I've always been like a celebrity hound. I'm like, wow, Billy Graham, he's coming to campus. And I wasn't, you know, not a Christian. I was just kind of not hanging out with the Christian group on campus because that was too cool. And so I thought, I've got to go see Billy Graham. He's going to speak in Battelle Chapel. I'm going, you know, and I was sitting in the Calhoun Dining Hall. That's one of the 12 then residential colleges in the 80s. And, I'm sitting there, you know, probably talking about the Little Rascals with my friends or some goofy trivia, TV trivia. And I look up and into the dining hall, into this dining hall of all 12, walks Billy Graham and all the students in that Christian fellowship. And they walk into a side door and had dinner in a private lounge. Billy Graham had dinner with that group that if I had not quit that group a few weeks before, I would have been having dinner with Billy Graham. And I will never forget that feeling like, oh my gosh, oh my gosh. Because I stepped away from God. And it's kind of like I knew that I never would meet Billy Graham. I hoped to meet him all these years, but I never met him. And he was such a special man. So it amazes me whenever I talk to people who knew him personally the way you did, you know, I'm just in awe of that. Because not only did you know him as a friend, he was your mentor as an evangelist. You are today doing what he did. You're doing gigantic crusades in stadiums. Obviously, not recently because of the weird shutdown. But it's just I'm in awe of it because as you just said, there's nobody like him. There was nobody like him. He was a unique figure in the 20th century.
He really was. And you know, speaking of having dinner with him, I had lunch with him once. He was doing one of his crusades, and we went to the Red Lobster, or as Billy would have said, the Red Lobster, you know, lobster. But so we're sitting there, and, you know, Billy had a ball cap on, and here's the funny thing. While we're in town where Billy's doing a crusade, there was an atheist convention happening at the same time. So we're sitting at this table, and people recognize Billy, even though he has a ball cap pulled over his face. He had sort of that profile that looked like it belonged on Mount Rushmore, you know? And it's a funny thing. Here are these atheists who were impressed by Billy Graham. Oh, hello, Mr. Graham. And they're shaking his hand. And you could tell because they had the little name tag for the convention they were at. They were part of this atheist convention. He was so kind to them. And I just thought, this is how Jesus would be. You know, oh, you're an atheist? Well, listen, Billy's a representative of Christ, and he was a very caring, giving guy. But when he would sit and have a meal with him, he would ask you, he'd say, tell me about yourself. And he really was interested, and he would listen. And he would ask questions.
I'm just feeling worse about myself the more I hear about this. We're going to be right back. I'm talking to my friend Greg Laurie. Folks, why would you go away?
It's a marshmallow world.
Folks, I'm talking to Greg Laurie. We laugh and we laugh. We love each other. And we are talking about Billy Graham. Greg, you were just telling us about how you had lunch with Billy Graham. And I know you're just saying that to rub it in since I never got to meet the guy. And you're like, oh, we had lunch all the time. We even had lunch at Red Lobster. And so I was saying that I think it's vital right now during these divided times that we all understand that the most important thing, no matter what happens politically, because I care about politics, but boy, oh boy, the reason I care about politics is because of the gospel. And we got to get our priorities straight. So you're saying that Billy Graham, he lived that out. And that's not easy to do, to work with, you said, Lyndon Johnson and JFK. I mean, they were famous in their private lives for really not being particularly wonderful. People complain about Trump. They don't know anything about JFK and LBJ, much less Clinton. And And yet Billy Graham had the ability to love people wherever they were. You were talking about people from an atheist convention coming up to him. And I just think we need to be reminded of that. So tell us more about that, because that's so beautiful that he would ask these people about, you know, who are you or how are you doing or what can I pray for? Boy, do we need to be reminded right now.
Yeah, I think it's true. You know, it was said of Jesus that he was the friend of sinners. And that was a criticism leveled at him by the Pharisees. But he was a friend of sinners. And so a man like Zacchaeus had a conversation with Jesus, or the woman caught in the act of adultery, or the woman at the well. And he would build bridges to them. Jesus was always building bridges to people. And so Billy Graham really emulated that. He was the most godly man I ever met. I mean, I think he was one of the greatest preachers in human history, but yet there was this wonderful, sweet quality, a humility. I mean, he was a Southern man, so he was a gentleman in that regard, but he was always very interested in everyone he talked to, and not just famous people, just regular people. He took an interest in them, and they could see that. And I think they would just sort of end up opening their heart to him as a result. And, you know, I mean, you think about, here's a guy who he first began to have communication with the president, starting with Truman. That didn't go so well. He learned some important lessons there, because he kind of crossed a line by his own admission in his meeting with the president and talked about it afterwards to the press and never did that again. But then, you know, fast forwarding through the various presidents, Billy was very close with Eisenhower, with Nixon, with Kennedy, with Johnson, of course, with Reagan, very close with Reagan. And even President Obama went to see Billy at his home in Montreat, North Carolina. And you could arguably say Billy had a relationship with Donald Trump, not when he was president, but when he was still a businessman, because Trump came to Billy's 95th birthday party and sat at the table with him. So they had a conversation and a relationship. So to me, this is a beautiful thing. It's like, you know, we want to, you know, Paul says he becomes all things to all men that he might win them to Christ. And it doesn't mean we compromise our views. It doesn't mean we do something that is ever immoral or unethical. But what it does mean is we want to keep communication open, because the objective is to build a bridge, not burn a bridge, and to be a stepping stone, not a stumbling block. Because how can a person change if we don't engage them with the gospel? As you can say, as you know, Eric, I mean, your life was changed by Christ. My life was too. But first, we have to have a conversation and some kind of a relationship with a non-believer before they can hear the gospel and come to know the Lord. So I think Billy was a master at that. And not only publicly as a preacher, but privately as a bridge builder.
It's such an interesting thing, you know, when you think of Jesus being a friend of sinners and being criticized for that. But I mean, at the same time, he wasn't friends with Herod or with Pilate. In other words, it's such a tricky thing, and there's no right answer, right? In other words, was it Jesus or John the Baptist who called Herod that old fox or something like that? I can never remember.
Actually, Jesus said that Herod demanded to see him, and Herod and Jesus said, "You tell that fox that I'm doing my work here." And it's pretty interesting that Jesus used that verbiage with a man of Herod's position and power. So clearly, Christ was not intimidated by that. But one little footnote on Herod is when Herod finally did see Jesus, because you remember Pontius Pilate was trying him, and Jesus was like a political hot potato. So Pilate handed him off to Herod. And as Christ stood before Herod, the Bible says Herod was hoping to see a miracle from Jesus, and he did no miracle for Herod. And in fact, he never spoke a single word to Herod. So he had nothing to say to Herod, but he had quite a bit to say to Pilate. And they had a conversation and they engaged. But of course, Pilate, you know, condemned Christ to death ultimately. But Jesus took time for Nicodemus, who was a religious man. Right. I think Jesus opened himself up and revealed himself to those who really wanted to know him, and to those who did not, he did not. And so that's why.
But isn't it amazing, though, that he did not say anything to Herod? He didn't say, let me pray for you. How can I pray for you? He called him that old fox. And then when he was called before him, he said nothing. So, I mean, that's just the counterpoint that, wow, we're talking Jesus. We're not talking about Billy Graham.
Yeah.
So this is tough. This is tough stuff. And that's why we have to have a personal relationship with God. Otherwise, there's just no way of moving forward. Greg, I'm so excited that you've written this book on Billy Graham. Congratulations. I cannot wait to see you in person and give you a hug, even though we'll both be wearing masks and there'll be plexiglass between us. God bless you, my friend.
Thank you, Eric. God bless you, too.
Midnight, Joe Biden, did you know algorithms could switch the votes from wrong to right? Did you know?
Imagine I tell you, with all the problems we have, there are people genuinely enslaved in places like South Sudan. They are being enslaved by people who believe slavery is a good thing. These are radical Muslims who think enslaving Christians is a good thing, and they enslave them and treat them like slaves. We can do something about it, but they need our money. So I'm asking you, go to MetaxasTalk.com, click on the banner. How about if you give $50 or $100 or $250 to free a human being? Folks, please go to MetaxasTalk.com. Do anything you can. Folks, welcome back to the Eric Metaxas Show. I want to say, before I forget, we get letters, we get emails from folks out there. I read every single one of them. I, Eric Metaxas, not my staff, I read every single one of them. And I cannot ever tell you what it means to me, what you write. I want to say thank you from the bottom of my heart. Some people write to the ericmetaxas.com website. Some people write to the Metaxas Talk website. I read them all. And I want to say it just means everything to me. Your encouragement, the whole thing. I'm really, I'm just deeply grateful to you. God bless you. Thank you for all you say. We try to answer as we're able, but I wanted to make sure I said that. Today we've got. Oh my gosh, what am I just saying? We Jonathan Kahn and Greg Laurie today. But while I have you, let me just say that tomorrow I'm doing another reading of the Uncle Muggsy book. If you want to buy that, we recommend you go to mystore.com. They're way oversold, so it's going to take some time for you to get these books. But at these prices, I don't think you can complain. I think at these prices, you should have to ride a bicycle to Minnesota to pick up the books, but we'll ship them to you. But the Uncle Muggsy things, we're going to read that tomorrow. Tomorrow, we've got Hormoz. I can't think of his last name.
Shariat.
Hormoz Shariat. One of the most beautiful stories about what is happening in Iran. You don't hear this stuff. And so that's why we do this show. It's amazing. We've got Melanie Penn later in the week. You know, we love Melanie. She's a dear friend, amazing musical talent, Melanie Penn. We're going to re-air for Christmas our friend Howard Eddington, one of the greatest preachers alive today. He was on this program. He wrote a book called The Forgotten Man of Christmas about Joseph. It's amazing. So we thought we've got to air that at Christmas time. On Christmas Day, we're going to air I've done a number of Socrates in the City events, and we thought for Christmas it would be nice to get away from the news a little bit. If we're able to air Colin Nickel, I interviewed him in Oxford University 5 years ago to talk about his book, The Great Christmas Comet. It's about the Bethlehem star. He makes the case brilliantly that it was a comet, not a conjunction of two stars or anything like that. So that's going to be Christmas Day. And then Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday of next week, we want to air my conversations with Walter Hooper. He just passed away. He was the secretary to C.S. Lewis and really the executor of Lewis's literary estate. If it weren't for Walter Hooper, whom I had the privilege of calling a friend, we would probably not know half that we know about C.S. Lewis. It is what he did is one of the untold stories of the 20th century. I had the privilege of getting to tell that story through Socrates in the City. So next week, we're going to be running those. If there's any breaking news, you can find us through, well, you should be subscribed to my newsletter at ericmetaxas.com. Any breaking news, we'll speak there. We'll speak on Twitter, Parler, and Facebook. But I feel like I'm being shadow banned on Facebook really dramatically. So I don't know if I'm just going to have to blow that off or what the story is. But we also want to say, if you want to buy Uncle Muggsy books, or you want to buy Donald the Caveman books, or you want to buy Poultry Rub, yes, Chairman of the Bird Poultry Rub is available at mystore.com. I got to tell you, I can't think of anything funnier than that. Chairman of the Bird Poultry Rub. But any of the Uncle Muggsy books, any of the Caveman books, my Bonhoeffer book for $25, that's the, do I have a copy around here? Yeah, this is the new edition, which is $35 on Amazon, I believe. You can also find my books at SocratesInTheCity.com. And if you go to our radio website, MetaxasTalk.com, you can find Albin's books, a lot of swag from the show. And don't forget, CSI. We need your help. CSI, click on the banner. God bless you.
Here comes Santa Claus. Here comes Santa Claus. Right down Santa Claus Lane.